Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Human Services Committee. I call this Human Services Finance and Policy Committee to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of minutes. Chair Schumacher, did you want to move the approval of minutes?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes.
Chair Schumacher moves the approval of the previous minutes. Any discussion? Hear none. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say nay. The minutes are now approved. With that, members, I just wanted to begin by pointing out the updated committee rules in your packets. Chair Schumacher and I have agreed to minor changes to the rules, and the rules will also be posted online. Mr. Chair, did you want to add anything to the new rules that we just added? So with that, members, I wanted to thank Chair Schumacher for running very smooth hearings in the previous weeks, and I hope I can replicate the same process. So he's done an amazing job, so thank you, Chair Schumacher. And this rules will be updated, as I noted, on our webpage, the committee's webpage. The first bill before us is House File 1380. Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Wait, do I need to make my motion?
Okay. Yes, please.
So I move to lay over House File 1380 for possible inclusion in the future omnibus bill.
Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. First, I want to start by saying a huge thank you to my county commissioner. As many of you know, we serve in Clay County, which is way out there, and to make the drive here to be here at 8:15 in the morning is a task. And so I just want to start by saying thank you, because it is really important that we show up in these spaces. This bill is something we've been talking about for years. This is the creation of a psychiatric residential treatment facility in Clay County. We've talked about it a lot, that regionally and statewide, we need these beds. Clay County has really decided to step up what we believe to be a mental health mecca in the future, particularly for our youth. And we have a really robust juvenile detention center system. And what we've learned looking at some of that data is a lot of the youth that we serve in that space actually need high-level mental health services rather than a juvenile detention center. So what this bill is doing is it's creating the first part of the bill is to create a renovation lane so that we can renovate the first floor of our current psychiatric residential treatment facility into a PRTF. The second part of it is really addressing the rates that we need. We've talked a lot about other PRTFs have started in the state, and then after they start and after a couple months, they tend to tank because there's this growth pattern that we have to make sure that we get up to full capacity at a billing rate that we could be sustainable. And so we've taken a lot of time. This is almost a five-year project in the works to making sure that we can not only create it but sustain it. We have had robust conversations with our higher education institutions. If you don't know much about Moorhead, we have higher education institutions. We have MSUM, Concordia, M-State across the river. We have NDSU up north. We have UND. And so we've really reached out to all of our higher ed institutions to make sure that as they maybe do retrenchments, they're not looking at this area so that we can continue to have a robust professional support as we build and sustain this PRTF. And the last part is right now we already have PRTF startup funds as grants. What we've asked to do is, just because this process is very long and cumbersome, is that we've asked to extend that time frame so that we can do our due diligence to make sure that we're partnering with solutions to make sure they can get everything lined up, that we know what we're doing so that when we're ready to open, we're ready to be successful. This is an extremely bipartisan effort. Representative Joy is here with me. He'll say a couple words next. But also, many of you have actually signed on. Many of your counties have actually signed on, because this is really a regional need. So with that, Chair, I'll hand it over to Representative Joy.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Joy, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And I guess kudos to Representative Keeler. She's been pushing this and talking about this. And when she came to me this fall and asked about this, and the counties jumped on, and she's advocated across Minnesota for this, talked to different counties. You know, it's exciting. It's something we need. This is taking care of our, you know, what in Moorhead, I say, with us being such a close border community and everything that's going on up there, this is definitely something that's needed. So I give her a lot of credit for what she's done on this, and I look forward to seeing this get across the finish line. Thank you.
Thank you. To the next testifier, Commissioner Mojo, welcome to the committee, and thanks for taking the four-hour-long drive to come here. So please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Knorr, members of the committee. Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify before you today. Thank you to Representative Keeler, Representative Joy, and many of you who have signed on to support this vitally important initiative. My name is Jenny Mojo. I'm a Clay County Commissioner, and as I said earlier, I'm grateful for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1380. Minnesota is facing a critical shortage of psychiatric residential treatment facilities, PRTFs, especially for children with high acuity complex and co-occurring mental health conditions. This gap in care has significant consequences, making it harder for our state to provide the specialized treatment vulnerable children and their families urgently need. As reported in an October 2024 Minnesota Star Tribune article, data revealed from the Department of Human Services that showed that 281 children were referred for placement among the state's four existing PRTFs. Only 66 of those 281 children, 66 of those children were admitted, despite these facilities being licensed to serve 150 children. As of June 2024, they were only serving 85, as reported by Aspire Minnesota. This stark disparity highlights the urgent need to expand our state's capacity to provide care for children facing severe behavioral and mental health challenges. These children are an integral part of our communities. They play in our city parks, they attend the district schools in our communities, and their families contribute to the fabric of our society. When they face barriers to care, it affects not only their well-being, but also their families and our broader communities. It is critical that they have access to the specialized treatment that they need. Unfortunately, long wait lists have become a significant issue, leaving families desperate for care. Clay County is keenly aware of this issue, and we're taking proactive steps to address it. We've invested over $175,000 to the pre-design of a facility, and we have a dedicated team working on securing accreditation and overseeing essential programming. We're also working with Solutions Behavioral Health to operate the facility. This initiative has garnered broad support from a diverse coalition of stakeholders statewide. We've received resolutions of support from 28 counties. All 11 of Minnesota's tribal nations are educational leaders, both higher ed and local mental health providers, and our business communities, including all of the cities in our county. They've all passed resolutions of support of this effort, and additionally, we've been working with our legislators and agency commissioners to ensure this facility aligns with the state's broader mental health care goals, and the initiative has received strong bipartisan support. Now to the core of the reason why we're here today. Opening and operating a PRTF comes with substantial financial challenges, particularly when it comes to maintaining a sustainable per diem rate that covers operational costs. Many facilities across the state are struggling to stay open due to the financial instability, and without a sufficient per diem rate, it is almost impossible to keep these essential services running while ensuring high quality care for our children, our children. With the complex mental health care needs that they all have. Currently, the cost of providing care often exceeds the available reimbursement rates, and that's leading to deficits to force facilities to close or reduce vital services. This is essentially problematic for children in need of extensive specialized care that requires skilled staff, therapeutic interventions, and appropriate facilities. Raising children is hard. We need extra help. House File 1380 directly addresses these financial challenges by addressing the following. One, providing adequate compensation for high quality care. The proposed $1,800 per day per diem rate would ensure that facilities have the financial resources needed to support specialized treatment programs and skilled staff, ultimately providing the best care for our children. Two, covering a remodel and operational costs. Operating a PRTF requires significant upfront resources. Our estimate is approximately $1.5 million upfront before reimbursements from DHS would come in, including the accreditation, staffing, facility maintenance, therapy, and medical services. House File 1380 would provide funding to remodel that existing non-secure detention space into an 18-bed PRTF, meeting the licensing requirements from DHS and the Department of Health. On October 24th, 2024, DHS toured our non-secure programming space and inquired about the option of turning a portion of those beds into a secure unit, which we would absolutely support. Three, ensuring accessibility. By ensuring the financial viability of a PRTF, House File 1380 helps keep facilities open, addressing the pressing shortage of treatment options for children with those significant behavioral health challenges. And three, possibly the most important, improving our long-term outcomes. With financial stability, PRTFs can focus on improving treatment outcomes. This includes comprehensive care plans, culturally sensitive programming, and long-term support for children. In conclusion, House File 1380 is a crucial legislative measure that will ensure the long-term sustainability of PRTFs. By providing the necessary financial support, it will help to meet the growing demand for specialized mental health services for children with complex mental health needs. This investment in mental health care will guarantee Minnesota's most vulnerable children have access to the care that they need, ensuring a brighter future for them. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do we have anyone else in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions. Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing the bill forward. And thank you, Commissioner, for taking the long trip down here and laying out what needs to be done out there. This is something that is extremely important. The problem we have in our behavioral health system is we never built it out, and this is a critical part to helping it build it out, to not just address and build out the system, but make sure that our kiddos, instead of being sent out of state or languishing elsewhere, will have a way to be able to be treated here in our state by folks in our state. And I appreciate the way that you folks are approaching in a very collaborative way, developing a regional approach mm-hmm. that will help to address the needs up in your part of the state, which has been so underserved. So I'm strongly in favor of this. Thank you for the hard work you're doing. I hope it serves an example to the other parts of the state.
Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious what kind of remodeling needs to be done. I mean, I think you have a 25-bed non-secured facility right now, right? So what needs to be done in order to get that to 18 beds that are going to be for this purpose?
Commissioner Mojo.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you also for the question. There are some certain requirements by DHS that need to be required on that, softening of finishes from that non-secure space, and just flow for additional programming capability space within that area.
Representative Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is, are those beds currently being used? Are they full? I mean, you had mentioned, maybe I heard you wrong, but there's a lot of open beds that aren't being filled right now on a waiting list that... And what's the reason for that? And
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you for the question. In regards to Clay County specifically, Clay County has a secure and non-secure juvenile detention center, which many counties throughout the state buy into a bed purchasing agreement on the secure piece. We are at full capacity, and we have long waiting lists. As a snapshot, last week we were serving 9 Hennepin and Ramsey children in that facility as well. So what we would need to do to offset what that need is not get rid of any beds. We don't have any bed openings. Those are other facilities in the state. But we would then add additional capacity to the PRTF beds, and then that would need to, we need to offset set a space that we're working quite diligently on with those non-secure detention beds.
Representative Gordon, any follow-up?
I guess the last follow-up I would have is, what are we paying currently for those beds? I mean, that $1,800 a day, would that be a change to everything that you guys are doing, or just this portion of what you're doing?
Commissioner.
Can you speak to the rate? You want me to, or you?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not quite understanding your question. I'm sorry.
Also, Mr. Chair, so my question, I guess, is if we're changing this rate to the $1,800 per diem, or we're adding that in, I mean, are we paying a current rate now, and would that change what we're currently paying, and you know what I mean?
Now I understand your question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I'm just really excited in the morning to talk about this. There's a different classification on the PRTF, which is what the incurred cost would be as opposed to the non-secure or secure rate. So Clay County is operating that facility without any state help outside of what those reimbursable rates are. But the bill ahead today specifically is to talk about the unique challenges that PRTFs have. There's a reason that other communities and entities are not opening them is because they are financially unviable, which is why we're talking about this rate specifically.
Okay.
Representative Cora.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler. And my comments are similar to Chair Fisher, but I want to talk about, you know, when we talk a lot about border-to-border services and keeping families together. And you had mentioned that you're serving folks from Hennepin and Ramsey, and I represent in Ramsey. And I think what's really important for us to take away today is that there's innovation happening all over the state and not just in the metro area. And we tend to focus a lot on what we have in the metro because there are so many resources just because our population is so condensed, right? But I think, you know, bills like this really highlight what the rest of the state is doing and ways that we can keep families together and keep families where they're at. And so it's my hope that this committee continues to invest in programs like this so that we can build out our infrastructure for families across the state, keep people where they're at, and not have families separated across the state while they're also going through times where they need, they have significant challenges where they need to utilize these services. So thank you both for bringing this bill, for the bipartisan work on this, and to Clay County for, you know, proactively seeing this as an issue and being on it. You know, again, as somebody who represents in the metro, I'm always keeping my eyes open for ways that the rest of the state is doing things. And I think this is really great work we should pay attention to. Thank you.
Chair Burr.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So we do the expansion. Right now, how is staff? Are you, should move this closer. Are you having challenges with filling staff, and do you foresee anything as this expands?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. Thank you, Rep. Backer, for the question. Clay County is uniquely positioned, as earlier stated, with the metro, Fargo-Moorhead metro, that is, in regards to a workforce. It is challenging, given the complex needs of these children, to keep a facility like this staffed. But given the higher education opportunities available to us for the workforce, we really feel like we are uniquely positioned. So we've been able to keep this open. It's not been an issue to close bed capacity because of staffing issues. Certainly, we utilize a variable hour component in regards to staffing, so that's been helpful to fill some of those areas. But given the vibrant healthcare options in Fargo-Moorhead and the workforce options, we feel like we're set to be successful here.
No further questions. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill. When I first started in the legislature, one of my big questions was, where are the babies? Where are the children going? And Representative Gilman was in that committee where I asked that question a lot of times. Because the truth of the matter is, since we don't have places for them here, they are going out of state. And so this legislature in 2023 requested that Children, Youth, and Families collect that data and tell us, where are our babies? Where are our children with mental health? And what we learned is that in 2023, 86 of our babies went out of state. And when they go out of state, our counties pay for that. Mm-hmm. Those come out of property taxpayer dollars. Our counties are paying to send our children out of state because there's not enough capacity in state. And a couple of things happen when we send our children out of state. One, our counties pay for it at the tune, they sign contracts with organizations out of state where they say how much they will pay them monthly. And those contracts are $30,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 that our taxpayers are paying to send our children out of state because we do not have appropriate care here. The other thing that happens is we get to feel like we're doing something when in fact we have no oversight in what's happening out of state, none. Some of the facilities we have sent our children to have been shut down for horrific crimes of child abuse while Minnesota children were there, while Minnesota residents were there, because we don't have any oversight in the organizations to which we are sending tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars to because we do not have the infrastructure in this state. Representative Keeler, this is a wonderful step in helping us build that infrastructure. And I want to just make it really clear that we either pay for it here and we oversee it and we make sure it's done right and our children are cared for, or our counties pay for it out of state and we have no oversight and our children are hurt.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for this. I think it's really important. One of the things that I had heard just over time is that our hospitals are really being the footprint of kind of the stepping stone because we don't have the availability. Can you give us an idea of what you anticipate happening there by opening up some of this opportunity?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Nora. Thank you, Rep. Murphy, for the question. What we are hearing from our staff at the West Central Regional Center is there are children that need that higher complex mental health care, and oftentimes due to the nature of hospitals, they won't accept them or they're in emergency rooms, and so it just backlogs a system of non-appropriate care. So you either have children in a high secure juvenile detention facility, children spending 24 hours a day with a social worker in a county in Minnesota, 24 hours a day with a social worker because there's no placement. And so what we're hoping is, even though this is a smaller capacity add statewide, is it will help to put more appropriate children in more appropriate placements and reduce some of that backlog. And we're hoping that it will change those outcomes, as I said earlier.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I believe, too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any closing remarks? Vice Chair Kim.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for leaning into this. We've had a ton of conversations, and we're absolutely willing to have more. I think one thing that I learned in this process was the first thing is similar to what some of you said. When our kids don't have the appropriate place to go, we're shipping them out of state, we're housing them in a hospital for far too long, or we're placing them in a juvenile detention center, none of which are providing the services that they need. The other component to it is that when we see an issue, Clay County stepped up to be part of the solution. We know that we build these robust systems in the metro, but we are a greater Minnesota entity. And the cool part about this is when kids are in these types of services, often families and adults need to lean in at least 2 times a week. So if you think about a geographic spread and you're having to drive 5 hours one way to get to your child twice a week to have this support network, it just isn't as successful as it can be. And so I'm really, really, really proud of the work my community has done. We really have done diligence across all of these areas before coming to you so that we know that as a community, we're really prepared to do this. Again, really excited to have Representative Joy join me in this to prove that serving our kids in greater Minnesota is not a partisan issue. It's something that we all love and care about our kids and want to do this collectively. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, Vice Chair Killer renews her motion that House File 1380 to be laid over. So House File 1380 is laid over for possible inclusion in future omnibus bill. The next bill we have is House File 1166. Representative Coran, please move your bill and introduce it.
Thank you, Chair. I move that House File 1166 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Please proceed.
Password time. Sorry, I'm having difficulty. Sorry, Chair.
It's a tech bill, so it's got to be tech related.
There we go. Oh, I got it. Thank you. Sorry. Ironically, we're talking about technology, and I just had an issue with technology. All right. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair and members. House File 1166 establishes the Disability Services Technology and Advocacy Expansion Grant. This is a grant dedicated to enhancing education and understanding of the different assistive technology and remote support resources and options that are available to people aging and those with disabilities. This bill is being brought forward by ARM, which for the past decade has been a leader in the promotion of the role that assistive technology and remote support can play in services that people aging and those with disabilities receive.
As we continue to work on finding solutions to support more people with fewer resources and less staff, assistive technology and remote support is a critical piece of that puzzle. Here to talk more about the work that has been done and the future focus in the advancement of assistive technology and remote support is Elena Gallagher with ARM.
Sorry, I turned it off. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Chair Noor and committee members. My name is Elena Gallagher. I am the Executive Project Manager with ARM, specifically focused on the Innovation Grant, which works on the technology that we're talking about. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. This bill strengthens Minnesota's commitment to older adults and individuals with disabilities by expanding access to assistive technology and remote support, empowering people to live independently, engage in their communities, and achieve greater self-sufficiency. As highlighted in the one-pager included in today's packet, the ARM work has already been doing in this space has had a substantial impact across Minnesota. To date, an estimated 42,280 individuals have been directly impacted by these efforts. The feedback we receive from lead agencies and service providers has been overwhelmingly positive. Training participants consistently emphasize the critical value of these sessions and request that they be offered annually to keep pace with evolving technology solutions and policy. However, funding for this work is running out as we near the end of our funded DHS grants. HF 1166 is designed to ensure that we not only continue this highly impactful work, but also expand its reach to additional areas, ensuring that all Minnesotans impacted by aging-related needs or disabilities have access to tools that enhance their independence. So, why does this matter? Assistive technology and remote support provide individuals with the tools to live independently, work, and participate in their communities while reducing reliance on in-person care. These solutions ease direct care staffing shortages, prevent crises, and delay or prevent institutional placements, creating long-term savings for state-funded programs like Medicaid. By investing in these technologies and ensuring individuals, families, and professionals have the knowledge to use them effectively, Minnesota can improve outcomes, expand opportunities, and help more people remain in their homes and engaged in their communities while reducing long-term care costs. In conclusion, HF 1166 is a smart, future-focused investment that builds upon proven, high-impact work already underway in Minnesota. By supporting this bill, we can ensure that Minnesotans have the tools they need to live independently, reduce reliance on costly services, and fully participate in their communities. I urge the committee to support this bill and help build a more inclusive and innovative Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions? Representative Varney.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Curran, for bringing this forward. I do have a question. I am familiar with a variety of types of assistive technology, Dragon software, communication boards. Could you tell me a little bit more about the assistive technology specific to the programming that you're seeking funding for?
Ms. Gallagher.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Vernick. It's actually not funding specific to any type of assistive technology. This is really more focused on education, training, and support throughout the state so that people have more access to assistive technology. So when we do the training, we talk about the broad spectrum and the umbrella of assistive technology as a whole, including exactly what you mentioned, you know, communication types of devices and software, as well as daily living tools or tools to help people with employment and engaging in their care. So kind of all over the board, which is really fun and exciting. But as I'm sure all of you can imagine, technology changes at a very, very rapid pace. And so as we've seen in the training and education we've already been providing, people are requesting it almost annually as a recurring thing because they feel like they fall so far behind in an understanding And unfortunately, it's a pretty limited field of experts and professionals who are able to engage and provide oversight and more information on that ever-changing field.
Representative Viney.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Gilman.
Thank you so much, Chair. Did you have something that you wanted to say?
Mr. Chair, if I could add.
Sorry.
Representative Carl.
Thank you. And just so to further go into like some examples of how this would be used. So you had mentioned different like communications technology, but for somebody who might be in a setting that requires currently somebody, a direct support professional, where we know that we have workforce shortages, different things that can be used can be very, very simple things, like a vibrating alarm clock that helps somebody wake up on time. Devices that would help somebody monitor if they've taken the appropriate medication at the right time. Prompts to do different things throughout the day that could replace a human being that would need to be there and be paid and go through the background study process that we've talked about, right? And then a lot of this, too, involves overnight care. And so people would be able to, people who currently might have to have an overnight staff where we're paying somebody literally to sleep because we have to, that there are ways that we can help monitor somebody safely remotely and have that. I know, again, to mention in Rep. Keeler's area, CCRI has some pretty cool stuff going on where they've got staff at a centrally located place so that if they needed to get to somebody who has an emergency, they're within just a few minutes away, but they can remotely monitor several people in case they might have needs overnight. So it's just a really more efficient way to care for people. And what this grant would do is allow for people to have a hub to get that information because like the testifier said, it's difficult for providers and for individuals to sort of find this information on their own. And it's been really, really successful to hold informational events and actually have physical things that people can like try and use and see if it would work for them. And that's how that's really how these tools become effective, is when people can actually engage and learn. And so that's what this will help us do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. So quick question, just curious about the annual report. What's going to be included in the annual report as it comes back by you all? Thank you.
Ms. Gunn.
So we would be including information about the response to trainings. Obviously, I think that's really important, making sure that the value of what we're delivering is impactful and useful for the audience who's receiving it. But also actually looking at the statistical data of how the technology is being used and if we see an increase of usage. One of the things that I would like to start doing, and I think that we'd be able to do with these funds, is being able to look at increased data on hospitalization decrease. There have been studies and more hints, I guess, that assistive technology and remote support can decrease hospitalizations pretty substantially, but I don't think we've done that work yet in Minnesota to show that. So that's something that I think that we could expand and be able to include in an annual report. How we do that is still yet to be figured out, but I would be able to come up with that information.
Question. Representative Gunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whenever I hear of something like this, I think of Helen Keller and how we thought she was unintelligent. We thought she had zero potential. This was many years ago. And since there's not an Ann Sullivan born every minute, you know, to come alongside and spend the hours and hours and hours, just think of the people that are kind of trapped inside themselves, their potential largely unknown. Could you share any stories of how you've seen this technology give folks the freedom to express, to engage, to really fulfill their potential in life? I'd love to hear any bit of that you can share.
Ms. Kennedy.
Absolutely. I have thousands of stories, and I always say that this work is some of the most fun work because I get to see the impact in such a substantial way. One that comes to mind is there was an individual who lived in a residential home, so a four-person home, and their home was moving towards trying to support individuals in using and maintaining their own medications. It was set initially for her a goal of only being interactive with her meds 20% of the time, even with a medication dispenser as the change for technology. So that was what her team had planned. This was them, in their minds, giving her more independence, right? They're doing their due diligence. They're going for it. She got the medication dispenser, and she was independent with her meds 100% of the time, so blew their goals out of the water. But not only that, when the technology failed, she sat down staff. She got them to sit down at the table and figure out a plan for how she could continue to take her meds, get a replacement for her device, and maintain that independence. And what they reported is that prior to that, she had never once engaged in planning in her own life in that regard. So something as little as a medication dispenser had that much of a substantial impact for getting somebody to feel so empowered in their own life that they could sit down and start making their own decisions. And I mean, remote support, as you mentioned, remote support can have such amazing benefits. We actually, years ago, did a video at ARM of a couple of guys who were using remote support for the first time just for overnights. And recently I showed that video to the provider who had been engaged in that process. And while they were showing it, I noticed a few of the people in the room actually getting a little choked up. And me being a little nosy, I was like, hey, you know what? I noticed this had a pretty strong emotional impact. And they said that not only had one of those individuals gone on and moved into his own apartment from, again, a group home setting to his own apartment, but he'd also gotten married. And so it really gave that opportunity to live his life genuinely and fully to himself. And that trust that not only are we saying, hey, look, you can do this, it's them building that own trust in themselves that they can as well.
Representative Gunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm good.
Any other member discussion? Any closing remarks? Vice Chair Kim.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to lean into the conversation about how great I think this technology is, because as you mentioned, CCRI is in my district, and one of the very first things I did a couple years ago when I went to tour was actually look at their technology services, because leaning into some independence living, actually just like you see them thrive so much. And it was things as simple as like monitoring when they get in and out of bed to make sure that they're staying on their sleep routine, their food. You know, some people like to get into the fridge too much in the middle of the night, so they were able to track that. You know, things as like getting their mail and doing these things. And so, but it wasn't even for just the individual. It was also for the comfort of the family and the individuals that love them, because it was giving them this independence while still having some monitoring, while addressing our critical work shortage. And so it's something that's working wonderful in Moorhead, and I would highlight how great we are, because I think Moorhead's so great anyways, but it's really creating this robust system for people to also have some steps to lean into. So like this idea that I could live on my own if I get used to this technology is just such a wonderful thing to see, and I'm so proud of the work that CCRI is doing in our community. So thank you for the bill.
Any closing remarks?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much, members, for your consideration as we move forward. I think, you know, a lot of us, or all of us, take for granted the things that we're able to do on our own every day. And we're also taking for granted the technology use that we implement for ourselves, right? Like, I know that just me as an individual, not on waivered services, not in a group home, just an independent adult, I know that I've made adaptations in my own life to make sure my phone goes off at times when I need to do certain things. And what this bill does is gives access and information to people who might need a lot of the things that we frankly can take for granted, so that people can move toward living more independently. It's also a great solution to a lot of the workforce issues that we're seeing. So thank you for the support, and looking forward to further conversation.
Thank you so much. House File 1166 is laid over for possible inclusion in future omnibus bill. The next bill before us is House File 487. Representative Wiener. While you're coming forward, I'll move House File 487 to be laid over for possible inclusion in future omnibus bill. Please proceed with the introduction of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for giving the opportunity or let us have the opportunity to present House File 487. It's a piece of legislation that is important, awesome, transformative, dedicated, amazing, and compassionate. And those aren't my descriptive words. They're the words from people in this packet from across the state of Minnesota who've had not just positive interactions with this group, but life-changing interactions with this group. As a candidate, I have to admit, I did not understand mental health and wellness. I'm a pretty upbeat guy. As a matter of fact, a morning person. And you could probably see from my demeanor sometimes late night on the floor that that demeanor slides pretty quickly after supper time. But here we are talking about a great bill. A rather modest ask as well. That really, truly, and it's hard to put into words the effect that this has on so many people's lives. So I cannot probably describe it as best as the testifiers that I have here today with me, and I would like to turn it over to them at this time.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee, and thank you so much for taking the time today. I am Isaiah Franson. I am the Director of Culture and Community Outreach for Wellness in the Woods. Wellness in the Woods is a 501c3 nonprofit that provides programs and activities centered on advocacy, education, and expanding statewide peer networks. As an organization, we are dedicated to improving access to mental health care and substance use recovery for all residents, with a focus on reaching rural and underserved communities. Mental health is not just an individual or a personal crisis. It is a statewide economic and social emergency. Nearly 1 million Minnesotans face mental health challenges each and every year, which costs our state over $6 billion annually. And unfortunately, that current landscape of mental health does not look to be getting better anytime soon. So what does prevention and peer-focused services will become increasingly important for all of us moving forward? I will leave you with this personal statement from a participant on our weekly Wednesday VPSN. This is what she said. Attending the weekly Wednesday sessions has done so much for my confidence in mental health. I started out very shy and not able to turn my camera on and speak very much. Now I often find myself sharing, asking questions, and turning on my camera. The biggest change from the beginning to now is that I feel safe being seen. I feel more confident being heard. And overall, I have much improved self-agency. And overall, I have improved and enhanced my self-esteem and well-being. I know it is much easier to make improvements and changes in a supportive community environment. And it's testimonials like these that highlight the importance of peer-focused preventative mental health services without any barriers. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. To the next testifier, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
We're going to switch. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about House File 487. My name is Monica Yaden. I am employed by Wellness in the Woods as the Director of Process Improvement and Communications. House File 487 is a continuation of funds appropriated to us in the 24-25 biennium, and this file would continue it into the next biennium. Today, I would like to share with you what was done with those dollars in the current biennium and urge you to continue the support into the next. One of the biggest things is that with those dollars, we have streamlined our data collection processes, which means that we have improved upon our ability to illustrate our impact. In 2023, I testified before this committee that we had 3,537 VPSN interactions across 43 counties in 2022. By virtue of the funds received through this appropriation, VPSN alone served 121% more interactions across 63 counties and one tribal reservation in 2024. Also in 2024, across all programs, we served at least 54,494 interactions with Minnesota residents across 83 different counties. This includes 7,826 interactions on VPSN, 36,878 phone and text interactions on our warm line, 857 interactions on Recovery in the Woods programming, and 8,362 interactions across 141 unique events in our Recovery on the Road programming. Not included in the total number of 54,494 interactions are the estimated 2,500 interactions we had through our fee-for-service offerings, providing peer support in jails and additional community support event programs. If you consider the $300,000 we graciously received in 2024, the state paid approximately $5.50 per interaction in 2024. We're not just serving a large number of Minnesota residents. We are also making significant impact on those that we do serve. On the warm line and VPSN, we asked, did calling or joining today help with your mental well-being? Of the 25,188 persons responding to this question in 2024, 98% said that it did improve their mental or emotional well-being. We have submitted written testimony for one of our service users, as well as written testimony from several of our staff across the state. And there are also additional testimonials on the third page of the annual report, which is the thing I provided in color because we forgot to submit it on time. I do want to share one specific story with you about one specific VPSN participant who has been a regular attendee for about 3 years. When they first began to join, they were extremely reactive. The tiniest inconvenience would ruin their entire day. Today, the same person still attends regularly. However, they are not the same person. They still join and tell us about inconveniences and decisions that they are facing. However, there is a confidence to face these things that was never there before. Additionally, this person regularly provides support to other participants while on the platform and is extremely encouraging and inspirational to their peers. I remarked upon the changes I had seen directly to this person recently, and they told me it's because of VPSN. This is just one story of the impact that our programs can have on the persons that utilize them. Every single day, we have program participants tell us that our services help them feel less alone, less crazy, less like killing themselves. Every single day, people tell us that their use of our services helps them feel more confident, more skillful, and more hopeful. For less than $6 per interaction, the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to show its support of a program that serves all of Minnesota, urban and rural alike. Please support House File 487.
Thank you so much for the testimony. To the next testifier, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Knorr and committee members. I'm Jody Freiholz-London. I am the executive director and the founder of Wellness in the Woods. In 2013, while working as a statewide director for what was then Minnesota's peer-run organization, my position was terminated as statewide director of training, again, due to mismanagement. I've worked for seven organizations that have been that pretty much were deflated and disappeared because of mismanagement. And so when I came home and told my spouse, my dear friend and my spouse, Tom, that I was no longer employed, we sat down, we discussed, we prayed and said, we're both tired of this. Let's start our own so we know what's happening and how we can serve all of Minnesota. I live in Todd County, Minnesota, and although my spouse, my best partner in this, we lost him to dementia in June, he was there for us the entire time. Now in this fourth quarter of my life, I have the opportunity to work with 60 individuals who have their own lived experience and use that to support Minnesotans across the entire state. If you look at where we have staff, we are both geographically and culturally diverse. We are making a difference. Individuals who use our services, at least 32 people in only one quarter, shared with us that before using our services, they were feeling suicidal. And after a 20-minute call, did not have to use any more extensive services. 32 people in only one quarter. I am so proud of my team. They have worked passionately and diligently, and it's actually the first time in my life where I have a team that I can count on, that will respond to the needs of our community. And I am so proud to say that we have people who are now working with us who have not had the opportunity to work in a long time. They are working off their benefits. At least two people are working off of RSDI. They have limited now their ability and needs for food stamps and for other benefits. So I'm a pretty conservative spender, as my team will tell you, and we just think that this is a great investment for the state of Minnesota. We thank you for your support.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, members' discussion. Representative Fredericks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Weiner. And thank you for the testifiers, too. I'm a huge proponent of peer services, so I just want to say thank you for the work that you do. I know how impactful that it can be. I will say, though, and I want to say this in this space, it is hard for me getting behind any direct appropriation for just one organization, because it's a growing community, and I want this committee as much as we can, or this legislature as much as we can, to support all people that are doing the good work that you all are doing, and whether that's you or RCOs or recovery community organizations. We have very limited dollars this year, and I think that in the years past we've set up a grant program to allow all of the organizations in the state that are focused on recovery, focusing on those peer services, to be able to have access to those dollars. And so I just want to say thank you for the work that you do, and if we do move forward as a committee and wanting to put money available to those that are doing the recovery work, that we would do it in a way that would be similar to what we've done in the past, where there's a grant program and all people in the recovery space would have access to apply for those dollars. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other member? The closing remarks, Representative Wing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think there was a comment made earlier that that is rather fitting, you know, about watching how something else was done up in Clay County and how that can be effective and copied across the state. And here we have a group that is small in one of the poorest areas of our state. Todd County is one of the poorest counties in our state, but has such reach across the whole state as well. And I would love to see more effective groups like this follow the lead. And maybe that will happen. Maybe that will ease the mind of Representative Frederick. But at this point in time, this is what we have. And it's a great outfit that's doing amazing work. I'm so proud to carry the bill 2 years ago. It was actually the first bill that I carried. Thank you, Representative Knorr, for hearing that. Had to actually corner him, which I was strategically located by the bathroom, which was effective because anyone that had to use the facilities had to go past me. So I appreciate carrying this bill last year and it getting funded, and I look forward to being funded again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. We still remember that, you know, mixed, you know, Democrats and Republicans in one, on third floor. So that was the So, well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing how we can help. And I think there was a previous funding, which we'll need to look into where we are with that funding, too. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 1553, Representative Scriba. While you're coming up, I move to lay House File 1553 over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Please introduce the bill and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Knorr, and other representatives. Do I have a Zoom call person?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I'm going to refer to a lot of stuff to Director Adam Musklowski, and I'm going to let him do most of the speaking. But Ely, Minnesota, no one knows where it is. It has a nursing home, and the nearest nursing home is 50 miles away in Virginia, Minnesota. They have we have a lot of people, different types of people staying in our community, the elderly, and we've got a lot of cuts. And our city has, and our area has raised money throughout the years just to keep it going. And last year we got a lot of good funding, and this year it looks like it's going to be cut. So we need some more, and Senator Hochschild and I are trying to help all these communities in our district. We have a very rural district, and I'll let Adam tell the story. He'll do a better job, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Before I proceed, I just wanted to remind the committees that the House File 487 was laid over for possible inclusion. And so we are on House File 1553. To the testifier on Zoom, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify. My name is Adam Musklowski. I serve as the administrator for Boundary Waters Care Center in Ely. We're a small skilled nursing facility licensed for 42 beds, and we're truly at the end of the road. As Roger mentioned, the next closest skilled nursing facility is nearly 50 miles away. We're also independent, nonprofit. We don't have any large corporate backing. We're not part of any big conglomerate. And that's rare for nursing homes in the state. We don't really have a safety net. Any funds received would go a long way towards stabilizing the facility's financial footing. In the legislative session 2 years ago, nursing homes across the state received a $12.35 per patient day rate add-on. This expired at the end of 2024, and Boundary Waters Care Center was impacted with a decrease in revenue of approximately $125,000. The Care Center has taken part in the Critical Access Nursing Home Funding Program, which provided $400,000 in revenue per year on average. This designation ends on June 30th of this year with an ability to reapply, but no guarantees. There's also uncertainty when it comes to proposed nursing home worker minimum wage increases that have been proposed by the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. I have been assured by some that this will not go into effect without some upfront funding. However, projection models that I have seen on total cost of these increases have not taken into account union wage scales. These models have shown an impact of $200,000 for our facility, as an example, but when the increase in wage is applied to our union wage scale and the different steps on that scale, the impact is more around $400,000. Just these three things not going our way would result in an over $900,000 swing in revenue and expense for us. This doesn't include the recent long-term care cuts included in the governor's budget proposal that will reduce revenue for Boundary Waters Care Center an additional $1 million over the next 4 years. We also have added costs relating to our location at the end of the road. Staffing continues to be an issue, with the facility continuing to rely on agency staffing in order to meet our residents' needs. In 2024, this cost the facility $136,000. Additionally, many of our residents have surgery and other procedures in Duluth, which is 2 hours away, requiring transportation that can be over $1,000 round trip. We also continue to see delays in the county's ability to process Medicaid applications. This sometimes stretches as long as 6 months, and this is 6 months in which we just aren't paid for residents' care, bringing cash flow issues to the forefront. Beyond the operational juggling that is required to keep a nursing home running in a rural setting such as ours, the building itself is aging, and upgrades continue to be necessary to the existing infrastructure. I recently received a quote for a project to replace the facility's water mains that came in at $355,000. This is a project that has to be done, as much of our building is 60 years old. The bottom line is that we need all the help we can get. We're faced with a lot of uncertainty. So whether funding received is used to help operate or to invest in the building, either way, it'll go a long way toward helping keep people that work their whole life in Ely in the community that they call home. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair. I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, members' discussion. Representative Carr.
Thank you, Chair. Sure, I'll chime in and just say thank you. You know, we've had a few bills today that address Minnesotans in greater Minnesota, and I think that's just so wonderful that we're having these conversations about and highlighting the organizations that we have across the state that are helping people locally, meeting people literally where they're at. And so, you know, I know that we're laying a lot of bills over today for consideration, but I think even just having the hearing and highlighting the good work that all these people are doing across Minnesota is absolutely worth our time and conversation. And so thank you for highlighting that. And thanks to your community for meeting the needs of folks in Ely.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Any closing remarks?
Thank you, Representative Curran. The last person that spoke talked about saving 32 people's lives, and that to me is worth everything you got, because without those people there, what happens? You know, I'm big into the veteran thing because we're losing so many a day. And I look at our nursing home when I go, it's kind of funny. I went to go see Adam and I'm at the nursing home and I'm seeing all these people there. And I remember these people when they were younger, when I was a child. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, you know, where would they be? What would they do? What would their families do? So the work that we do in our community, we take care of our people till the end. And any help we can get, we would appreciate. And I realize this is not a good year to be looking for any funding, but just the reality of whatever is left before the hammer comes down would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So House File 1553 is laid over. The next bill before us is House File 1472. Representative Momani Helsley, please move your bill and introduce it.
Yes, please do.
All right, thank you so much, Chair Noor and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present on House File 1472, a bill that ensures Minnesota seniors don't have to navigate the complexity of aging services like they are stuck deciphering a cryptic puzzle with missing pieces. Aging is inevitable, trust me, I truly double-checked on this. But making sure that older citizens have access to resources they need shouldn't be a struggle. That's why we have the Senior Linkage Line. And if you don't know what it is, think of it as an ultimate roadmap assistant for aging. Instead of rerouting after a wrong turn, it helps the seniors avoid getting lost in the first place. But here's the catch. We need to act now. A new federal requirement means Minnesotans must step up, ensuring we remain a leader in aging services rather than scrambling to comply later. And let's be honest, when it comes to supporting our seniors, we would much rather be ahead of the curve than playing catch-up. This bill isn't just meeting the mandates. It is about investing in solutions that work. So House File 1472 does three main things. It provides essential funding for expanding Senior Linkage Line, ensuring that every senior who reaches out for guidance gets the timely expert support. Number two, it covers 21 positions, including 18 dedicated staff members who will be on the front lines, making sure seniors aren't left on hold longer than it takes to grow a retirement fund. Just saying. And then number three, ensuring Minnesotans comply with new federal regulations that came out in 2024, preventing a bureaucratic bottleneck that would put seniors at risk. Now let's talk numbers. Because critical services like Senior Linkage Line need real funding, House File 1472 carries a fiscal note of $1.995 million in year 2026 and $2.071 million for year 2027. This isn't just a cost. It is a strategic investment. Every dollar spent today on aging services saves thousands in emergency health care, long-term care costs, and savings on prescription drugs in the future. And did you know in 2024, the senior linkage line received just over 122,000 calls. On an average, 150 calls a day were abandoned because of long waiting times. And in spite of all of this, they continue to maintain an impressive approval rate of 94%. That means it works. But don't take my word for it. I would like to call Maureen Schneider, Chair of the Minnesota Board on Aging, along with our expert testifiers, to highlight why this bill is essential for Minnesotan seniors and why the time to act is now.
Thank you. Representative Mamani Helse moves House File 1472 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. With that, to your testifier, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
I think Maureen is on Zoom.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Noor and committee. And thank you, Representative Mamanya Hilsley. My name is Maureen Schneider. I am Chair of the Minnesota Board on Aging, and I'm pleased to be with you this morning. I actually have been in the field of aging for over 35 years, and I know firsthand how critical it is for Minnesotans, older Minnesotans, and their families to have access to trusted information and resources to support their thriving in their homes and communities. I've been a family caregiver myself on many occasions. I'm also a former hospice board member as well as a hospice volunteer. And I'm happy to speak today regarding House File 1472 because I believe it is exactly the example that I want to share with you about the work of the Minnesota Board on Aging. The Board on Aging is the premium aging and federally designated state unit of aging organization in the state of Minnesota. And for years, we have brought good value to Minnesota's taxpayers and to the older adults and their families that we serve. I won't spend my time with you today talking about our aging demographics because I know that you're familiar with it. And in listening to the testimony earlier today, I've heard the comments over and over about Minnesota is an aging population. But here's what happens with the senior linkage line. We are nationally recognized as a premier information and assistance line. We've been in business for many years. We are a free service. And how the senior linkage line assists older adults and their caregivers is that we connect people to resources that can serve them in their homes. Now, we call these sometimes softer services. Why is that so? Well, these services flow down from the Federal Older Americans Act. And as I told you, the Board on Aging is the state unit on aging. So we administer these Federal Older Americans Act dollars. And we call them softer because if people are able to access these services, then we have an opportunity to keep them away from the catastrophes that can happen in older age where people have no options left except to receive services on Medicaid in long-term care facilities. So when I think about the kinds of services that we're talking about, the delivered meals, the cleaning services, the home care, maybe some transportation services, these are the things that help people remain viable and vital to their communities. The senior linkage line, as I said, is a free service, and we have some serious needs if we're going to continue to do what we have done so well for so many years. We received in 2024, we received over 122,000 calls, but We answered only 70% of those calls. There were 150 calls every day that were abandoned, really due to the fact that the wait times were simply too long. People gave up and hung up. Not something I like to report to you. Although 94% of the people who received a service and talked to the senior linkage line said that they approved of the help that they got, we are not happy with having to abandon calls. This becomes particularly acute during the Medicare open enrollment period that occurs between October and December every year. And that's when we were receiving almost 700 calls per day, and 63 of those calls, only 63%, were answered due to the high demand. During that open enrollment period for the Medicare, we helped people save $4,316,711 on prescription drug costs alone. So we know the demand is there. We want to continue to do justice to our Minnesota older adults and their families and their caregivers, but we're going to need the help with some additional resources to get this work done. The second part of the bill, I also want to just share with you, as I told you, we're the state unit on aging, we're the federally designated unit on aging, premier aging organization in Minnesota, been around for a long time. But in 2024, the federal government did, after years of waiting for some changes to the final rule, the Administration on Community Living, released the final rule that needed to update these regulations to implement our Older Americans Act programs. This is the first time the final rule had been updated since 1988. And it wasn't just a small revision. It was quite an extensive overhaul. In fact, there are 56 policies in the new federal regulations. Of course, the aim of this is to better support the National Aging Network, but that means that the Minnesota Board on Aging and its 7 area agencies on aging need to do considerable work in compliance to make sure that we are up to speed with the final rule. We won't be able to do this without some additional administrative help. So the two things then are the senior linkage line, because we do not want to fall behind in our national reputation serving Minnesotans, and we must implement the new final rule regulations on the Older Americans Act in order to stay in compliance. I do have our senior linkage line manager, Paige Johnson, is here with us in the room today. If you have technical questions, I'll be happy to answer anything also. I thank you again, Chair Knorr and Representative Hiltzley, and I urge you to consider funding this bill. With deep appreciation, thank you very much.
Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, members' discussion, Vice Chair Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm not sure who I should be asking the question. As we're talking about this, I'm again grateful for just the conversations around taking care of those most vulnerable. The hang-up calls, the abandoned calls, I would be curious if there's not a shortage of employees to answer the phone calls currently right now. Like, I just did a little search to see how many jobs are, like, the openings that are right now currently online, and I saw that there's 21, they're looking for 21 full-time employees currently that are not staffed with the senior linkage lines. How many are, like, unfunded? How many folks are not of the full-time employees that we've got appropriations for before? How many are currently not, you know, staffed right now? Like, is it, I saw 21, but maybe there's more right now. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with the response.
Chair Knorr, members of the committee, my name is Rena Shetty, and I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Board on Aging. Representative, to your question, the 21 positions that's in the bill, two of them are for the Minnesota Board on Aging's administrative support, two specifically for the Minnesota Board on Aging for the senior linkage line, and the other 18 are staffing that goes out to our area agencies on aging, so that covers all the counties in Minnesota and our tribal nation partners. So 18 out of those 22 positions are going out to our area agency on aging, so across the state. So they're not Minnesota Board on Aging staff, if that makes sense.
Vice Chair Gilman.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair. Also, how many full-time employees are you currently looking for right now, besides this bill that's here? I mean, the staff, it said you could have anywhere between 100 and 249 employees. How many staff are you currently, like, are you at capacity with your staff right now? Like, are you fully staffed, or do you have some that are, it looks like you're still hiring for some staff currently right now?
Ms. Sherry.
Chair Knorr, members, we may have some staffing open in our greater Minnesota areas, but at the MBA level, we are fully staffed at the moment. So this is seeking additional staff.
Vice Chair Gilman.
Okay, thank you, Chair. That's kind of what I was getting at, is if in greater Minnesota, that thank you for sharing that, you're not fully staffed, what would this bill do that is appropriating, you know, almost $4 million here? What would this bill do to help ensure that we are going to have, you know, staff, if currently you're not staffed in greater Minnesota, what's this going to do?
Chair Knorr and members, so I should clarify that with our current federal and state funding, we have staffing in place at the MBA level and our area agencies on aging. Some of those staffing might be open because of any number of issues, right? Whether it's trying to fill a vacancy, workforce shortage issues, or just trying to, so those vacancies, once they are filled, if we are at 100% capacity, we are doing the 96% of calls that are being received, we are attending to those calls. And so what this additional staffing does is meet the demands that's unfulfilled at this point, along with some of our complex questions, inquiries that come through the senior linkage line.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Ganda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like a really worthwhile program. Sounds like the need is there. I'm just curious, how do we pay for these positions then after the two-year period?
Ms. Sherry.
Chair Knorr, members, I believe the funding is for, we're waiting for some federal dollars also to come in. And at some point, I think once we are fully staffed, we'll have to do a reassessment of our staffing, both at the MBA level and with our area agencies on aging. The goal is to be good fiduciary, partners and to be responsible fiscally, so we'll evaluate the need on an ongoing basis.
Representative Gunn, I think this is ongoing appropriation. It's going to be added to the base, as noted, so there'll be additional cost ongoing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no any other member, Representative Momani Helsley, did you want to take us home with your closing remarks?
Thank you so much, Chair Knorr. Chair and members of this committee, thank you again for the opportunity to present House File 1472 today. As a freshman legislator, this bill carries deep personal and significant significance to me, not just because it's my first bill that I'm presenting, but because it embodies the values that has shaped me. I sit here before you as the first Kenyan American elected to the Minnesota State Legislature, a testament of promise of opportunity, hard work, and community. And in my culture, we hold our elders in the highest regard. We don't just care for them, we honor them, we listen to them, and we fight for them. My grandmother, Milka Obonyomomanyi, was the foundation of our family. She instilled in me the importance of respect, resilience, and responsibility. I only wish she was here today to witness this moment. Her granddaughter sitting in this chamber fighting for her and for every senior across Minnesotan to access the critical services they need to age with dignity, security, and joy. So House File 1472 is about ensuring that our seniors, that our elders don't struggle alone. It's about making sure that when they reach out for help, someone is there to answer that call. I urge you to support this bill, not just as a policy decision, but as a moral commitment to those who have paved the way for us. Let us rise to the occasion, elevate our responsibility, and inspire a future where every Minnesotan is able to thrive, age well, and live well in their communities. Thank you once again, Chair and the committee, for the opportunity to present this bill. I move to lay House File 1472 over for possible inclusion in the future omnibus bill. And please, if you can put it right on top of the pile, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and congratulations. Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. As a vice chair duty, congratulations on your first bill. We have treats coming, I guess, later this week from you then, right? Because as your first
yes,
bill,
they
we
are.
As a community in the morning. We love snacks. You're welcome. Thank you.
She's going to bring mandazi. So thank you so much, Chair. The next bill before us is House File 258. Representative Vining. While Representative Vanek is coming to the table, Representative Vanek moves House File 258 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Knorr and Chair Schumacher and members. Before you is House File 258, a technical bill designed to streamline the process of implementing the Department of Human Services related provisions that require federal approval. Currently, each DHS-related bill that contains provisions contingent on federal approval must include language specifying that the provision cannot take effect until that approval is obtained, and that DHS must notify the reviser when approval is granted. This process consumes significant time and resources for House Research and the reviser's office, creating unnecessary duplication across multiple bills. House File 258 addresses this inefficiency by establishing a clear, standardized procedure within Minnesota statutes, Section 256.01. Under this bill, DHS will be responsible for tracking and reporting on provisions with effective dates contingent on federal approval. Twice a year, by July 1st and September 1st, DHS will provide the reviser's office, the House Research Department, and the Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis Office with a complete list of such statutory provisions, along with an update on which provisions have received federal approval since the last report. A designated DHS employee will be required to attest to the accuracy of the reports. This legislation was developed in collaboration with Senate Council to improve efficiency and reduce the administrative burden on legislative staff. By ensuring a centralized and consistent reporting process, House File 258 will help us more effectively track federally approved provisions while freeing up resources for more substantive legislative work.
Thank you so much. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? This is more of a technical. I don't know why we don't even send it to the General Register, but we'll discuss it later. Any member discussion? This is just a technical bill instructing what needs to be done when we request the federal waiver programs and anything else that usually requires federal approval. Seeing none, your closing remarks and renew your motion.
Yes, I renew my motion that we move House File 258 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. I ask for your support in advancing this bill and look forward to working with you to improve our legislative process. It's a good bill.
Thank you so much. So House File 258 is laid over. To your next bill, Representative Vernick, 1911, House File 1911.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move that House File 1911 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you, Chair Knorr, Chair Schumacher, and members of the committee. Before you today, I have House File 1911, a bipartisan bill. It's super awesome IT infrastructure. It's brought forth by AMC and MAXA and indirectly by so many people who have come before this committee this session and complained about the Human Services IT infrastructure. Minnesota's Human Services IT systems are complex, fragmented, and outdated. And often, rather than supporting the critical human services programming that Minnesotans rely on, these systems create unnecessary burdens, delaying services, increasing administrative work, and making it harder for frontline workers to do their work effectively. Last biennium, the legislature took an important step by investing in modernizing state IT systems, an effort that was long overdue. However, counties, which are central to service delivery, have no dedicated funding to update their own systems, creating a major gap in efficiency and interoperability. House File 1911 is the natural next step in ensuring that counties can modernize alongside the state. One of the most pressing areas for investment is in the Social Services Information System, or as we've heard about, SSIS. With over 6,000 daily users, SSIS is a vital tool for tribal and county social service agencies to track, manage, and pay for social services. However, this system is in urgent need of modernization due to frequent outages, slow performance, and outdated, cumbersome use interfaces. The Department of Human Services recently conducted an in-depth review of SSIS, holding 12 listening sessions with over 150 social workers and 50 DHS staff. The key themes from that review were clear. Performance and stability issues frequently disrupt casework, leading to lost data and backlogs. No web or mobile capabilities, despite social workers being an inherently mobile profession. Limited system integration with courts, counties, and tribes, making coordination difficult. Lack of modern functionality, such as autosave, electronic signatures, and accessibility features. And compliance concerns, as Minnesota has committed to meeting federal comprehensive child welfare information system standards in 2018, but has yet to fully achieve compliance. To address these challenges, House File 1911 makes three key investments. $5 million in fiscal year 26 for grants to counties to offset costs of aligning with DHS service delivery transformation IT initiatives. A blank appropriation, and I know, right, we're short on money, so if we can turn the couch cushions over and we find something, this would be great to invest in. A blank appropriation to support county IT modernization projects, particularly those that improve interoperability between counties and DHS or foster collaboration between larger and smaller counties. And $40 million in fiscal year 26 to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to upgrade SSIS, complementing last year's session of $10 million in investments and leveraging federal matching funds to cover the full modernization costs. I recognize that these are significant investments, especially in a year with limited available funding. However, county-run and county-funded systems are just as critical as state systems in ensuring an efficient, effective human services workforce. If we want to improve service delivery, support our frontline workers, and ensure Minnesotans receive the care they need, modernizing these systems is not optional, it is necessary. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning again, Chair Knorr and members of the committee. Again, my name is Jenny Mojo. I am a Clay County Commissioner, and I am from a county that obviously gets two for the price of one, so you get double the testimony from me today. On behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, I'm pleased to testify in support of House File 1911, which, as you heard from Representative Vernig, would make critical investments in county technology systems. I want to emphasize that this request is not about nice-to-have updates. These resources are essential to bring county programs up to a basic level of operability. County IT modernization has been identified as a top priority from the Association of Minnesota Counties because it impacts some of the most critical issues facing counties today, including our workforce recruitment and retention. Requiring county employees to navigate outdated green screens and manually enter data for hours does not lead to high satisfaction or retention rates for individuals who are passionate about working directly with children and families. As we struggle to recruit the next generation of workers, it becomes even more difficult when our technology systems predate the birth of these new employees. Even more importantly, these outdated systems create a cumbersome and inflexible experience that is incompatible with how families and individuals live their lives. In Clay County, for example, our staff must navigate multiple screens just to determine the history of an individual involved in a case. The current system prevents workers from accessing critical risk assessments efficiently. When an assessor walks into a home, they need to know both the risk to the child and the risk to their own safety. But because vital data is buried across different screens, this information is not always readily available, putting both families and our staff at risk. It can take hours for assessors to comb through a family's history, hours that cannot be spared when it comes to the immediate safety of a vulnerable child. Additionally, the duplication of data entry is a significant burden. For example, our staff must enter the same information multiple times for each child, sometimes three times for each child in a family. Something as simple as updating an address for a large family can take up to 10 minutes when it should only take seconds. Every simple task is becoming a time-consuming challenge. And finally, county workers spend hours entering information on children, individuals, and families. The goal is to analyze the effectiveness of programs and feel confident in all of our investments. However, our systems are not nimble or flexible enough to do so. In Clay County, this inefficiency is particularly evident. The state recently added an additional document for case managers to complete for out-of-home placement plans, OHPP. This new form is essentially a broken-down version of the other OHPP, meaning workers must now create two separate documents for the same case, doubling their workload without providing any additional benefit to the families and clients in which we serve. This kind of inefficiency is simply not acceptable. While the legislature has made significant investments in state-level technology, which we appreciate, this modernization for human services systems funding has not been provided to overhaul the SSIS in a meaningful way to address the concerns that county workers have raised for years. We appreciate the interest from legislators on this topic, with many of you reaching out to your local county service offices to request demonstrations of SSIS and other systems over the interim and during the session. I hope that this interest will translate into action this year. Counties and individuals we serve need state investment to create a level playing field for all counties to serve people better. We need to serve our people better. Reliable data sources for lawmakers to evaluate these programs will help all of us and protect the data of all of Minnesota's residents. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Mojo. To the next testifier, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Knorr and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1911. My name is Dan Jensen. I'm here testifying on behalf of AMC, MAXA, MICA, and Olmsted County. I'm the Associate Director for Family Support and Assistance at Olmsted County. That's our Economic Supports Department. We are been working diligently for years with DHS and now with DHS and DCYF on modernization. We have moved committee work through MAXA modernization through the Human Service IT Alignment Group. We've been building partnerships with the state for a number of years in trying to do systems improvement, not just software improvement, but systems improvement. And for years, we've been really focused on a lot of the state work, and the state work is trying to accomplish to provide a flexibility for both our largest and our smallest counties. As you can imagine, there's a huge difference in the way services need to be delivered between these different size counties, and we need systems that can support both sides. We are looking for ways to serve our residents in a person-centered, integrated model, because oftentimes that is not the case. We have multiple siloed systems that don't talk to each other, don't communicate, and we struggle to understand where clients are at in all these various systems, not just looking in a system, but looking across systems. We are also focused on supporting data-driven decision that helps improve the quality of the work, that helps improve the outcomes, helps deliver the services we're able to get. Without the ability to have dashboards, without the ability to have access to data, we just don't have the capability to understand what's happening through a worker, with a case, with a multitude of cases. We can't answer the simplest of questions of how many clients do you serve? What's the average number of programs that your clients are on? These are things that we can only answer within programs, but not across our services. Modernizing the state system is just not enough. We also need to build county systems that are supporting a multidisciplinary coordination of care, because on our most difficult clients, we need to have multiple disciplinary trained staff coming together, financial workers. We need to have social workers that have mental health experience. We need to have public health nurses. They need to be able to come together across that continuum. We need to be able to streamline our local service delivery. We need to be able to improve our efficiencies that better serve delivery and reduce our administrative burdens. Because as you've heard, our administrative burdens are significant in the way that these systems work. And that takes time. And so workers that signed up to be caring for individuals to help to process applications and be able to move this work forward find that they're spending more time babysitting these very old systems than they are in doing the work that they want to do. From the state and county needs, we're here to request your support of HF 1911. 2 years ago, we advocated for the $200 million investment in state-level IT systems, and we appreciate that was supported by you as well. We were also there in part of the supporting of what ended up being a $10 million investment last year into the replacement of SSIS. In House File 1911, we are requesting an additional $40 million that allow us to replace a big portion of SSIS within the Child Welfare Information Systems section. We're also asking for your support in modernizing state systems county systems that are shovel ready. We have we are ready to sign contracts and ready to move forward with what we call a resident engagement platform, and that is allowing us to link these different state systems together so that we can see across them for the first time. We can have multidisciplinary teams be able to come together and work with our most difficult cases to start to make improvements in their lives for the first time. We were also asking to use these resources to be able to support a human services-focused artificial intelligence system to allow us to answer client questions when they're calling in. Right now, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, we try to answer calls, and if an artificial assistance, the assistance of artificial intelligence, we can move that to 24/7. So when a mother puts their children to bed at 3 in the morning, they can sit down, make calls, and start to get answers. More importantly, a medium-sized county of about 160,000 residents, receives 29,000 calls per month. This is the average number of calls over the last 4 months, 29,000 calls per month. And if each of those takes an average of 8 minutes, that's 23 FTEs trying to answer and return calls. We have seen a 40% improvement in areas of the metro that are using an IVR phone system, a similar process. And they, with that 40% savings, we could shift 10 FTEs, one county alone, to processing applications instead of answering calls. If those 10 shift, now we're looking at an upward spiral of we're going to have fewer calls because now we're going to be processing applications faster, and we're going to be able to deliver the services that our residents need. We're also looking for centralizing several contracts so that we can build systems and infrastructure around scripts that help us to automate within these older systems and Power BI reports or dashboard reports, and a technical infrastructure that allows us to have data that is structured the same, so we can make something in Olmsted County, we can plug it into Stearns County, and they can get it up and running in hours. Now, Olmsted and Stearns have a level of resource, but now we have the ability to move out into the small counties, Houston County, Winona County. They can start to plug in some of this infrastructure and allow that body of work to move forward in a nearly seamless way. So we're requesting, finally, $5 million to support local costs. As the state systems modernize, as they move, we need assistance with training. We need assistance with rebuilding interfaces, the integration work, making sure security is all in place. Those are local costs when we start to see the state systems change. We recognize that resources are limited. We recognize that this is a challenging time, but we really have the ability with the work that we've laid in this initial foundation to move very rapidly towards improving the systems that we have to better serve our residents. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify? Seeing none, members, discussion. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much for bringing this bill. Olmsted County got to spend a couple hours with me where I kept going like, what? What do you mean? You had to go to how many screens? So I really appreciate this bill. I really appreciate the kind of the need. I think this is one of those things that we've sort of put off and put off and put off, and we've sort of reached the end of that ability. And so I do think that this is a great bipartisan effort, and I just wanted to say thank you for highlighting the need.
Thank you so much. I know we have got leadership discussion on several fronts on systems modernization, so we'll continue to have this discussion, Mr. Chen members. Any other member discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks.
Yes, thank you, Chair Knorr and Chair Schumacher, for hearing House File 1911. We talk about belts and suspenders. I hope that you would consider a companion bill from Representative Nelson as well, House File 2425. I think we can all agree that systems modernization efforts have not kept pace with the rapidly evolving technology and service landscape. It's not sexy like roads and bridges. It doesn't provide groundbreaking and ribbon-cutting opportunities. The challenges counties and tribes face in delivering essential human services are not due to the lack of dedication from our workforce. They are due to the outdated, fragmented systems that make their jobs harder. I know many members of this committee share my passion for ensuring that people on the front lines of our social services systems have the tools they need to succeed. House File 1911 is an opportunity to make a meaningful difference for county workers and the Minnesotans they serve. I hope this is an area of bipartisan agreement where we can commit to a targeted investment. As someone who has worked for the Department of Labor and Industry, Minnesota OSHA, when they invested in upgrades to their IMIS system, I assure you that modernizing these systems will pay dividends for years to come in better outcomes for Minnesotans, in improved efficiency, and in stronger workforce retention for our county social services offices. Thank you, and I appreciate your consideration. I renew my motion that House File 1911 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you so much. So House File 1911 is laid over. So our next meeting is tomorrow at 8:15. Chair Schumacher, any statement on what we shall be seeing tomorrow?
We get to be here at 8:15 tomorrow morning. We'll be doing a few bills, mostly local, and then a discussion with public testimony on the waiver reimagine progress. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, we are now adjourned.